She waved her hand reassuringly.
All the men are shy today. Everything is changing right in front of our eyes. It's become such a wonderful thing to find a man who actually is willing to go to bed with a woman, that the woman gets all charged up and they press too much. I know it, but I can't change it.
As she talked, she closed the door behind her. She couldn't find any way to lock it, so she pulled a heavy chair in front of it.
So, if you're shy, we'll put out the light, sweetheart. Winona understands, baby. Just get out of those bulgy pants and come over here.
She unzipped the side of her dress and began to struggle out of it impatiently. I have to get back downtown for an 11 o'clock show tonight, lover, so don't let's waste any more time. By the third night, Raymond felt that he was fully adjusted to the new way of life. Winona had been extremely grateful for the extreme care he had put into his work with her, and that squealing, activated gratitude, which had been coupled with an absolute insistence that he take her name and permanent address, and that she write down his name and permanent address because her company was leaving in the morning for 8 weeks in Las Vegas, had given him considerable confidence. After she had had to leave, both of them feeling exhausted but triste after the parting, he had moved quietly and weightlessly into the living room, where Marco was playing at séance, explaining to the four girls that he understood academically exactly how a séance should operate because he had researched every necessary move, and that if they would all cooperate by believing, perhaps he could make something interesting happen the way things had happened in a fascinating textbook he had pored over all the way from San Francisco. It hadn't worked, but everybody enjoyed themselves, and when bedtime came, two of the girls joined up with Raymond as though they had all been assigned to each other by a lewd house mother, and after loads of fun, they had all dropped off to sleep and had slept like lambs. Raymond awoke twice during the night for a few languorous moments of trying to puzzle out how come he did not feel invaded by all these bodies that were hurling themselves at him or dotting the landscape of his privacy. But he could not reach the answer before he fell asleep, and in the morning with the girls getting ready to go off to offices or studios or dress houses or stores, no one had much more time than to wait patiently for a turn to put on lipstick hurriedly in the bathroom and rush out without any breakfast. The extraordinary thing to Raymond was that none of them ever returned. Marco would spend all of his day in the reading room of the 42nd Street Library, then in the late afternoon devote 2 hours to fruitful bird-dogging that was, mysteriously to Raymond, always successful. And when Raymond got back to the apartment at 6:22 every day, there would never be less than 3 interested and interesting girls there, making spaghetti or using the telephone. Marco explained on the first Saturday morning that women were much more like men, in many almost invisible ways, than men were, particularly in the non-involvement area, in which they were many, many more times like men, simply because their natural instinct to capture and hold could be suspended. Marco said that there was not a healthy woman alive who would not gladly agree to rush into bed if that action displaced only the present and did not connect with the past, nor had any possibility of any shape in the future. Good health could be served in this way, he said. No fears of reputation tarnish could threaten. It meant sex without sin, in the sense that, in the middle of the 20th century, when sexual activity is credited to a woman by several men, creating what was termed a past, could also penalize her for any sexual activity in the future. Since good health demands good sex, he assured Raymond that very nearly the entire female population of the city of New York would happily cooperate with them if approached in the proper, understanding manner. But how? Raymond asked him in awe and bewilderment.
How what?
How do you approach them?
Well, I do have the edge on others by being patently an officer and a gentleman by act of Congress, and I am graced with a certain courtliness of manner.
Yes, I agree. But so am I.
I approach them smiling. I tell them I'm an officer passing through New York, leaving in the morning for my new station in Hawaii, and that merely by looking at them, I find them enormously attractive sexually.
But what do they say?
First, of course, they thank me. They are with it, Raymond. Believe me, they are even a way ahead of me, and depending on whether they need to be at home that evening to greet a loyal breadwinner or under the clock at the Biltmore to persuade a courtier, or are committed to one or another irrevocable obligations which mar metropolitan life, they are keenly aware that one night is such a short, short burst of time in such a packed and crowded, concealing city as New York.
But when do they say...
Actually, Marco told him pedantically. I don't actually know until I get back here and the doorbell begins to ring, who will arrive and who won't. I always invite 6, every afternoon. So far, we have not had to make do with less than 3. And, but how do you...
How do I get them here?
Yes. I explain I'm using a friend's apartment. I write down the address, tear out the slip, and press it into their hands, always smiling in a pleasant, lustful way. And I murmur about cold champagne and some great records. Then I pat them on the rear and walk on. I assure you, Raymond, that is all there is to it. And everyone is richer all around.
Yes, I see. But...
But what?
Don't you ever have any permanent alliances? Raymond asked earnestly.
Of course, Marco said stoutly. What do you think I am? A zombie? In London, before this last post where I met you, I was head over heels in love with my colonel's wife and she with me, and we stayed that way for almost 2 years.
One night, Marco took 2 young things by the wrists and headed off for rest. One was a Miss Ernestine Dover, who worked at an exceptionally fine department store on 5th Avenue, and the other a Mrs. Diamantes, who was married to one of the best professional third basemen in the nation. After a while, they all fell asleep. Raymond was enjoying tremendous pleasure on a large bed in an adjoining room with a recording and variety artist, then unemployed, who was of Hawaiian, Negro, and Irish extraction, and whom Marco had met that afternoon in the vestibule of a church, where he had gone to light a cigar out of the wind. They all sat bolt upright as one person, Raymond and June, Miss Dover, and Mrs. Diamantes, because Marco was yelling, "Stop him! Stop him!" in a wild, hoarse voice, and trying to get out of the bed at something, his legs hopelessly entangled in the bedclothes. Mrs. Diamantes recovered first. After all, she was married, and she took Marco by the shoulders and threw him over backward on the bed, pinning his torso down with her own body, while Miss Dover held down his thrashing legs with hers.
"Ben! Ben!" Mrs. Diamantes yelled. "It's okay, lover, it's okay. You ain't over there, you're over here," Miss Dover shrilled.
Raymond and June stood naked in the doorway.
"What's the matter?" Raymond said.
Ben was rolling and pitching, his eyes wide open, as feral as a trapped animal who is willing to leave a paw behind if it can only get away from the teeth. June swooped an old highball up from the bureau, and rushing across the room, poured it on Marco. It brought him out. The girls climbed off him. He didn't speak to anyone, but he stared at Raymond apprehensively. He shuffled dazedly out of the room and into the bathroom. He shook his head slowly from side to side as he walked in tiny arcs like a punch-drunk fighter, and his left cheek flinched with a tick. He closed the bathroom door behind him, and they heard the lock snap and the light go on. Miss Dover went to the bathroom door and listened, and suddenly the tub taps were turned on with full force.
"Are you all right, honey?"
Miss Dover said, but there was no answer. After a while, although Marco wouldn't get out of the bathtub or speak, they all went back to sleep, and Mrs. Diamantes went in with Raymond and June. Marco's 9th day was a Sunday. Without any warning, they were suddenly alone. All the chicks had gone to other roosts. Marco brooded over such a hangover as had not happened to him in 14 years, since he had mixed Beaujolais wine with something called Wilkins Family Rye Whiskey. They ate steak for breakfast. Raymond opened the French windows and sat idly watching the river traffic and the multicolored metal band that never stopped moving along the West Side Highway. After a while, with Marco sunk into the silence of his perfect hangover, Raymond began to talk about Josie. She had gotten married 2 months before. She was living in the Argentine. Her husband was an agronomist. It had run on the society page of his own newspaper, and he said it as though, if they had not run the item, the marriage would not have been solemnized, and she would be free to go to him